Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Serial Killer Podcast, the podcast dedicated to serial killers. Who they were, what they did, and how. Episode 219. I am your humble host, Thomas Rosalind Vyborg Thune, and tonight I bring to you the saga of the Brierley Brothers. It is a tale made from all the stuff that would make for a gruesome horror film. The summary might read, three impoverished teens from the neighborhood embark on a gruesome killing spree that ultimately leads to two of them earning seats on death row, where they and four other condemned inmates orchestrate and carry out a dramatic escape. Often they are referred to as spree killers, but considering the number of murders and the fact that the killings did not occur on the same day, I choose to define them as true serial killers. Enjoy. This episode, like all other sagas told by me, would not be possible without my loyal Patreonies. They are Lisbeth, Russell, Lisa, Kathy, James, Cody, Kylie, Robert, Val, Marilyn, Craig, Emily, the Duggletons, Jonathan, Jennifer, Lunavar, Roy, Cheryl, Richard, Brad, Laurie, Manuel, Haley, James, Jeff, Avulin, Meg, and Crystal. You are truly the backbone of the Serial Killer Podcast, and without you there would be no show. Thank you.
I am forever grateful for my elite TSK Producers Club, and I want to show you that your patronage is not given in vain. All TSK episodes will be available 100% ad-free to my TSK Producers Club on patreon.com/theserialkillerpodcast. No generic ads, no ad reads, no jingles. I promise. And of course, if you wish to donate $15 a month, that's only $7.50 per episode, you are more than welcome to join the ranks of the TSK Producers Club too. So don't miss out and join now.
Mm-hmm. Imagine, if you will, dear listener, an anonymous-looking apartment house on Barton Avenue, Richmond, in the state of Virginia. It hadn't been opened for 3 baking hot days. Opening the door, the seasoned investigators were blasted with a wave of heat and rot. The smell was like a wall, or more apt, a tsunami of death hitting them square in the face as they entered. They had experienced this before. For some of the investigators, it was part and parcel of the job, but they had not seen a crime scene like this, with snakes slithering on the floor, stained with old blood from the floor. The investigators got out fast and called for animal control officers to subdue and remove the snakes. Later, after this was done, it had to be admitted the killers knew something, however minimal, about psychological warfare. Releasing from their confinement Harvey Wilkerson's pet snakes had been nothing short of successfully annoying and potentially dangerous to anyone entering the crime scene. They were also very well capable of damaging and/or obscuring crucial evidence. 2 puppies had also been running loose through the house. Sheer luck had saved them from being eaten by the snakes. Prosecutor Warren von Schuch moved through the putrid oven of the house had become, his shoes sticking to the blood-gummed floors. Later at home, breathing cool, clean air, he would find his clothes so saturated with a reek of blood and decomposition that he quickly undressed and threw them all in the washer. All 3 residents of the Barton Avenue home, among them a pregnant young woman and her 5-year-old son, were dead. The crime scene had been so gruesome, it brought to mind the Tate Massacre back in 1969, where pregnant Sharon Tate and her friends had been slaughtered by the Manson family. On a day that dawned like any other, Sheriff C.T. Woody Jr., a seasoned investigator with the Richmond, Virginia police, found himself embroiled in a high-speed pursuit that would sear itself into local lore. The vehicle he was chasing was being driven by none other than Linwood Briley. The airways buzzed incessantly with chatter as the chase unfolded, the staccato rhythm of the radio transmissions providing a tense soundtrack to the unfolding drama. The chase was a cat-and-mouse game, with the fleeing car always managing to stay one elusive step ahead. It was as if the driver had some uncanny ability to read minds, to anticipate the police every move. The situation was growing increasingly dangerous, not just for the officers involved, but for other drivers and pedestrians who found themselves unwittingly caught up in the chase. In the midst of the chaos, Robert Rice, a man who had seen his fair share of difficult situations, was forced to make a gut-wrenching decision. His voice, edged with urgency, crackled over the radio. "Just put him into a pole." Moments later, Linwood abandoned the car, leaving his father and the younger man behind, as the vehicle careened into a utility pole. Miraculously, both occupants survived the crash. As the police sifted through the wreckage, they made a chilling discovery. Linwood, widely considered the most intelligent of the Briley brothers, had been using a scanner to monitor their radio communications. It was a revelation that explained the seemingly supernatural foresight the fleeing car had exhibited. Among the survivors of the crash was a young man named Duncan Meekins. Once in custody, Meekins began to volunteer information about his friends, the Briley brothers. The details were chilling, painting a picture of a group of young men who had become embroiled in a world of unimaginable horror. In return for his cooperation, Meekins was offered a plea agreement, sparing him the grim fate of the electric chair. Meekins was a conundrum. He was a good-looking young man with an impressive academic record. No one could comprehend why someone with such promise would choose to participate in such horrific activities. But as the investigation unfolded, it became clear that this question would be asked of many others associated with the Briley brothers. In the end, Meekins was sentenced to life plus 8 years in prison. To protect his identity, he was sent under an assumed name to a facility far away from the influence of the Brileys. In the crackling heat of a 1973 summer, with a brilliance that could be mistaken for demonic prowess, James Briley trotted across the line of the law more speedily than a veteran cop Cecil L. Glunt anticipated. From a freshly stirred crime scene at a local convenience store, Briley, with muscular resilience, wrestled some hot lead exchanges with Glunt, all before neatly vaulting over a fence and enduring a harrowing gunshot to his flank. Yet, in a twist that mocked reality, Briley didn't remain grounded. He staggered to his feet, teeth clenched, and galloped down 12 city blocks, a tenebrous blur against the urban backdrop, before sanctuary arrived in the form of a friendly car. The life force that pulsated within James that day would later find utility on another dark night 6 years later, the 19th of October, 1979. Earlier that same day, in the solemn presence of his judicial overseer, Briley had waged his intentions to lead a life less conspicuous. Considering his parole status, as consequences lingered from his malicious wounding and robbery conviction back in 1973, he had every reason to tread lightly. But, as evening cloaked the day's residue, he found himself, along with his brother Linwood, shadowed by a question aimed at a languid green Chevy van curbside near their familial dwelling. Glimmering slightly with curiosity and suspicion, Linwood proposed the idea that it might be a police spy's nest. James, seeing differently, shrugged off the proposition, their unified curiosity leading them to explore the van's dark interior. They prodded, rocked, and tried peering through the tinted windows. James found himself taking a more aggressive stance. Unholstering his trusted and highly illegal sidearm, he fired towards the sky before plunging a second shot into the muddy ground. Yet silence persisted. Armed with a sense of slight triumph, James redirected them to their ride, sliding into the solace of the night. Certain no copper could maintain silent composure under such a bold display. As the echo of their gunfire faded into memory, an unseen curtain revealed itself. Within the belly of that muted green van was Henrico Police Investigator Shirley Engelhart, pained spectator to the Briley brothers' brazen dance on the edges of law and disorder. In a world where eyes watched from the sky and the law seemed omnipresent, the gang of misfits somehow managed to become shadows, slipping through the cracks of their surveillance nets. That night, under a haze of marijuana smoke and the warm buzz of alcohol, James, his brothers, and Meekins conspired in whispers, an audacious plan to rob Harvey Wilkerson. As the plan took shape, the quartet embarked on their mission, their hearts beating the drum of adrenaline. Nearing their destination on Barton Avenue, they were forced to take shelter in an unassuming garden shed, a refuge from prying eyes. Eventually, the streets drained of people, their silhouettes fading into the reach of the nocturnal abyss. Their targets, Wilkerson, a young man of 26 years, whom they had once called a friend, spied their approach. Fear sparked in his eyes, and his door was swiftly bolted, a flimsy shield against the impending storm. Undeterred, the Briley brothers and their accomplice advanced, their collective shadows swallowing the front porch. Then, in a twist of fate, or perhaps a surrender to fear, Wilkerson unbolted the door, opening the gateway to his own nightmare. The next acts of the macabre play unfolded rapidly. James, his brothers Lindwood and Anthony, and the adolescent Duncan Meekins descended upon the unsuspecting occupants. Like wolves, they overpowered their prey, silencing any chance of a cry for help with the cruel adhesive of electrical tape. In the kitchen, Linwood brutally raped 23-year-old Judy Barton. The poor woman was at the time 5 months pregnant. Duncan Meekins did not want to be outdone by Linwood, so he too raped Judy, mixing his own sperm with Linwood's. When both had finished, they pulled her into the living room with the others, half-naked, traumatized, and howling in fear. Following a haphazard search for anything worth stealing, Linwood walked out of the house. James shot Judy Barton in the head 4 times and ordered the juvenile Meekins, and here I quote, "You got to get one." A pillow was mashed against Harvey Wilkerson's head, and Meekins fired a shot, blood oozing through the pillowcase immediately afterwards. It had been a killing shot. James then shot 5-year-old Harvey Wayne Barton, who was on the couch, in the head, point-blank range. The reason for such savagery is unknown. The 5-year-old would not have been a reliable witness, and was of course completely innocent. Hopefully, since the Brileys acted fast, the child never really comprehended what was going on before being shot to death.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Law officers actively surveilling the neighborhood heard the gunshots and could even see the gang hurry back to their car. Unfortunately, police could not determine the gunfire's location, and they acted too little, too late. Linwood drove for a while and, listening to the scanner, heard of the pursuit. Stopping on Hazelhurst Avenue, the gang climbed out. Linwood tossed the shotgun brought from home over a fence, and Meekins looked for somewhere to hide the .22 rifle taken from Wilkerson. Not long after, hearing that police were watching with a scope, the gang ditched the car. Locals eventually found the guns and the holster and gave these to the police. Meekins told authorities that Linwood and James held the money stolen from the murdered family. When this was divided at the Brileys' house, Meekins walked away with less than $100. 26-year-old Harvey Wilkerson himself had more than flirted with criminal activity. A conviction in 1973 for possession of marijuana earned him a 3-month sentence that was later suspended, but he had to pay a $250 fine. In 1974, however, he did not fare so well.
A conviction for LSD possession resulted in a 12-month jailing. Also, that same year, Wilkerson was arrested and charged with armed robbery, but again, the charges eventually were dropped. Oddly, Wilkerson had trained to be a barber, and the records state this is how he was employed, beginning in summer 1976, after a period of probation. It seems reasonable to wonder what sort of life Judy Barton and 5-year-old Harvey might have had if Wilkerson had moved the family far from Richmond. The actual stakeout planning began around 2 Sunday afternoon, following the Wilkerson killings on Friday night. Richmond Detective Sergeant Norman A. Harding met with fellow detectives Henrico County Special Action Force and a few top-tier Richmond police officials. All present agreed that an arrest warrant for Linwood Briley should be acquired. 4 hours later, the teams were out watching for a purplish Chevy Nova. Inexplicably, even though arrest warrants had been obtained, James and Anthony entered Richmond Police Headquarters and turned themselves in. All told, within 24 hours of locating and investigating the Wilkerson crime scene, police arrested Linwood, James, younger brother Anthony, and Duncan Meekins. Middle sibling James received the death sentence after being charged with 3 counts of capital murder, 4 of discharging a firearm during commission of a felony, and 1 count of robbery. At that point, Linwood, Anthony, and Meekins' charges mirrored those of James, excepting those for murder were not capital. Beyond this, the Brileys were held in the city jail and scheduled for hearings in Richmond General District Court, bond for each set at $319,000. By today's standards, around $1 million. Duncan Meekins, who had agreed to turn state evidence, was taken to the juvenile detention home until his hearing before the Richmond Juvenile and Domestic Relations District Court. All 3 men appeared calm and spoke in sure voices, reported journalists Andrew Petkovsky and Alan Cooper on the 23rd of October 1979. James Briley was dressed in a print shirt and dark trousers. He had a neatly trimmed large afro haircut. His 2 brothers were dressed in jeans and pullover shirts. Both looked tired and wore their hair in cornrow styles. But, dear listener, the Brileys did oh so much more than slaughtering the Wilkerson family. The family slaying was their final act of depravity before capture. So, let us, before we continue, start to take a look at their background. In the confines of the urban labyrinth that is Richmond, Virginia, the seeds of an unspeakable evil were sown. 3 brothers, Linwood, Anthony, and James Briley, emerged from their unremarkable childhood as notorious killers of the late 20th century. Their insidious journey from adolescence to adulthood is a chilling exploration of the human capacity for malevolence, shaped by environmental influences and nascent psychopathy. The Briley brothers were raised in a regular neighborhood, in a regular home by their parents. Their father, also named James, was a hard-working man, a cement finisher by trade, who spent his days laboring under the hot sun to put food on the table. Contemporary witnesses later stated that James Sr. was the only man the brothers ever feared. Their mother, Bertha, was a homemaker who tried her best to instill values of respect and decency in her children. Both parents purportedly maintained a strict discipline, but the dark undercurrents of the Briley household were largely concealed from the neighborhood's prying eyes. From an early age, the brothers exhibited a morbid fascination with death and violence. It was Linwood, the oldest, who first demonstrated the brothers' cruel streak. He was just a young boy when he was discovered in the family's backyard, gleefully tormenting small animals. A macabre spectacle that sent chills down the spine of those who witnessed it. Such behavior is often a red flag in children, signaling deeper emotional and psychological issues. However, if the brother's parents were aware of Linwood's actions, they either chose to ignore them or were unable to effectively intervene. James, the middle child, closely followed in his older brother's footsteps. He was more subtle, but his capacity for brutality was no less. While Linwood reveled in overt displays of violence, James was more manipulative. He reveled in mind games, both with his peers and with adults, always finding ways to bend others to his will. His malevolent charisma and seemingly innocent exterior masked a chilling lack of empathy. Anthony Brierley, the youngest of the Brierley brothers, presented a stark contrast to his older siblings. Where Linwood and James were overt in their displays of violent tendencies, Anthony's nature was more subdued and elusive. He was not the instigator of the horrifying actions that would later define the Brierley family name, but neither was he completely detached from them. Anthony was more introverted, less assertive, and seemingly less invested in the cruel games that Linwood and James reveled in. Yet his quietness and reticence should not be mistaken for innocence. The youngest Brierley brother was, unfortunately, deeply influenced by the sadistic actions of his elder siblings. While the older brothers were the masterminds behind the crime spree that would horrify their community, Anthony was not just a passive observer. He became an accomplice, complicit in their atrocities, albeit with a more reserved participation. It was as if he was trapped in the shadow of Linwood and James, unable to break free from the toxic and violent environment they had shaped around him. As the seasons turned and the brothers made their passage into the wilds of adolescence, their wicked games took on a darker, more savage tone. The innocent lives of neighborhood pets were no longer sufficient to satiate their growing hunger for chaos. Instead, they turned to the primal fury of fire, delighting in its uncontrollable dance as it devoured everything in its path. This shift towards pyromania was not a mere childish fad, but a dangerous surge in their quest for dominance, control, and an audacious challenge to the authority figures who had begun to cast wary glances their way. Despite the intensifying storm of their actions, the brothers crafted a facade of tranquility, even charisma. Their intellect was undeniable, their social graces were impeccable, and their ability to paint a convincing portrait of innocence was masterful. They manipulated the perceptions of those around them with ease, successfully disguising the malignant shadows that lurked within their hearts. This stark contrast between their public personas and the malevolent reality of their private lives made their eventual plunge into the abyss of homicide all the more horrifying. In 1971, 16-year-old Linwood Brierley had loving parents, a comfortable home, and, from a high dormer window, a clear sightline to a particular house and alley across the street. Alone upstairs, he raised a .22-caliber rifle to the window, aimed, and fired a single shot at elderly neighbor and recent widow, Orlean Christian, as she hung laundry on a clothesline. Her relatives and friends presumed the combination of age, grief, and dwindling health were the culprits, until an anomalous wound was spotted in Mrs. Christian's armpit. A shrewd detective reviewed the autopsy report, made notes, and visited the alley. He sawed a 2x4 into the length matching that of the victim's height, bored a hole at the kill shot's entry angle, and determined the shooter had fired from the Briley residence. Linwood's future self might have been proud of the unerring accuracy responsible for the killing. In reality, upon the murder weapon's discovery, he remarked, and I quote, "I heard she had heart problems. She would have died soon anyway." End quote. For this unthinkable, random, and senseless crime, Linwood received a wrist-slap sentence of 1 year in reform school. At this point, it is quite clear that Linwood was a fledgling psychopath. 2 years later, in 1973, middle brother James shot at a policeman during a chase following a convenience store robbery. Again, as with Linwood, lenient sentencing put 16-year-old James in juvenile hall. One wonders what sort of message this tolerance of extreme violence and obvious psychological disorder sent to the youngest Briley brother, Anthony. And with that, we come to the end of part one in this saga covering the Slaying brothers. Next episode, we'll meet the brothers' ultimate demise. So as they say in the land of radio, stay tuned.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.